Alex Kungu joins the show to talk about Jalen and Jason step forward. Do we believe Danny Ainge and shooting from the logo? It's the Wednesday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go. Jalen and Jay's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Millie. Wednesday, hump day, and I'm here to get you through it. Got a little bit of help with me. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com. Cover the team on a daily basis, so hope you're enjoying my take on things. But it's always great to get a different perspective. And today I've got Alex Kungu, who is blogging for Hoops Island and very prominent on the Twitter.com. Alex, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. Thanks for having me on. Been waiting.
Well, I like that little dig at me right away. yeah, man, it's good to have you on. So we're at this point, by the time people listen to this, about a day and a half away from trade deadline. So we'll talk about that. We'll save that because there's a lot of rumors out there. Let's start with that Hawks game. And I don't know, any thoughts, anything jump out at you from that game? I talked for half an hour last night about this.
I mean, nothing too much. I mean, I kind of felt like some of the turnovers and lack of late-game execution was kind of expected without having, like, your two top point guards. Jason Tatum is continuing to look more like a guy who's figuring stuff out, putting things together. Same with Jaylen Brown. It was good to see Gordon Hayward have a quick recovery from whatever that was in Philadelphia. Otherwise, you know, ho-hum game.
Yeah.
Oh, Trae Young shooting from the logo was wildly disrespectful, but otherwise, you know, ho-hum one.
I mean, the logo shots. You know what? I want to take a sharp right turn here because the All-Star game, the Skill Saturday, whatever, the All-Star Saturday thing, so they added two shots to the three-point contest. And I've seen people losing their minds on Twitter over two shots. They added a shot between like the three racks at the top. So you shoot in the corner, you shoot at that right at the break. There's one shot there that's going to be like 6 feet behind the line. It's a logo shot. Then you get your top of the key shot. Then you get another logo shot, one, and then you do your break rack and the corner rack. I think that shot that you saw Trae Young hit, you see those shots. Damian Lillard hit them. Steph Curry hits them all the time. Why not add those things? But I saw you tweet about it. I can't believe that people are just losing their minds over the three-point shooting contest.
Yeah, it seems to be a thing where it's like when it's any difference to anything, like the reaction is to get upset. But then it's like people don't even care about it, just how it is normally. So I've never understood that. To me, it's like we used to like, networks used to like show Steph Curry practicing shots, practicing. Yeah. So like now you're adding that into like a competition setting and people are going to act like they're not going to watch it. Like it's not going to be exciting. Like it's not going to be crazy if like Trae Young clears a rack shooting like 35-foot bombs in a 3-point contest with that crowd. Like there's a real excitement factor to it. I think it could turn out to be awesome. I think it turned out to be embarrassing for some people, like if they touched through some air balls. But either way, like it's just a 3-point contest, man. Like I don't understand why there has to be such strong reaction. Like just watch, let's see what happens. Like guys, let the NBA work a little bit. Like let's see that they're trying to incorporate stuff. If it sucks, we'll all say it sucks and move on. But who knows?
Right.
I just don't like how people don't give this stuff a chance. I really wish they did.
It's kind of nuts to see. It's just two shots, two freaking shots that and people are I don't know. People like to be negative. They just like to be negative. Like instead of just like, all right, you know, let's see the skills challenge. All right, skills. Is it anything exciting? No. But like, all right, Tatum's back in the skills challenge and he gets to defend the skills challenge thing. All right. It's nothing spectacular, but mentioned the skills challenge, and people on Twitter like lose their minds. So anyway, that's just an aside after mentioning the Trae Young thing from deep. I think it's interesting the switching that the Celtics did, and to see that kind of attack against the switch, that knowing by taking one dribble, say, to your left, you get a pick set for you. You take one dribble to your left. If that guy, you know it's going to be a switch. If that guy just kind of is sitting way back there, just fire away. If you've got the ability to shoot that, just keep bombing from there. Which I think is a good strategy if you can hit that at a decent clip. But also, I don't know, part of the problem, I think, that people are saying is part of the NBA right now. Like, do people really want to see that 35-foot shot all the time? Is it like watching a guy swing for the fences? And if he, like, Trae missed after the first quarter. Like, he didn't hit another three the rest of the game. Is that enjoyable? Like, you tell me, is that something that's like fun to watch?
Well, I know people in Philly wish they had someone that could at least entertain taking that shot.
Man, I love this. That was just, wow, off the top rope. Just, hey, by the way, I'm just going to punch Philly in the mouth right here.
I have to.
That was good. That was good. I like that.
But yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I think it just depends on the setting, because things I've noticed is like, if, say, like, the team is going well, right? Like, when Atlanta was killing, they started off hot, the team is, like, winning and stuff like that, and then maybe he takes, like, two in a row and they miss, it's not a big problem. It's whatever. But then, like, let's say things start getting dicey. The Celtics go on a 10-2 run. Suddenly the team is down, like, 7-8. And then you launch that shot. I think that's when people start having a problem. I just think it's all contextual. Like, when they – and it's kind of like a front runner. It's kind of like a front runner type of mindset. And I think that's kind of the case of three-pointers in general. I think for, like, some of the older generation, it's, like, it's fine if it's working, it's in the flow. But once you start getting down, like, there's always this thing. Like, it's always Tommy Alessandro, get to the basket. Get right. to the basket. So it's, like, I just think that's what it is. It's all contextual, and most of the time, there's still kind of a belief that when you're losing or when you're in a crunch, you're supposed to get to the basket. That's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to just keep launching threes. And I actually kind of think that's why Milwaukee's defense has done so well. It's a mind trick, but that's going way off topic.
No, I like this topic because, you know, it's part of, like, I like the NBA. I like the way the game is going. Are some things going too far? Yes. And you saw it in that game against the Hawks that there might be a quick trigger in those situations. But at the same time, that's you kind of have to defend that, I would think. And by hitting shots from the logo, you force a defense to, all right, I got to come out there and guard this guy, because even if he's hitting 4 of 11, that's still a good enough percentage. So it's this weird kind of generational kind of fissure that's been created, because people my age generally look at that and be like, well, you can take a shot from the logo basically anytime you want. Why not try to move the ball around and try to get a layup or do something? But at the same time, when you're Trae Young and you're as small as he is, launching from the logo is a way to open things up. And suddenly his passing, which is awesome, becomes a real problem. If you have to step up to 30 feet, and that's where the high pick and roll is being set, and he gets by you, now he's got an entire court to work with. And you could pass the ball 2-3 times, and the defense is spread all over the place. So I'm just kind of curious as to the perception of it throughout the league and different age groups.
You know what I think? I think one team should just be like, just shoot them. Shoot them every play. Just shoot it. Like, just don't guard half court. If you're going to take that shot, let's see how your teammates react. You might hit 4 for 10, but if you're going to take 5 possessions in a row, you're just going to stop at 30 feet and just shoot it. Shoot it. Let's see what happens after you miss 1 or 2. Like, what are the mind games that come with that? That's something I've been thinking about. I'm just like, what would happen? Like, would he just keep shooting it from 35 feet over and over? Like, would his teammates still be like, engage in the game? Like, is that a thing? I don't know. I kind of think about that, and like, it's true that like, it's a good percentage when you shoot it. But I also think kind of at the same time, like, players are humans and they know, and it's like, oh crap, I just shot this from like half court and my fans are looking at me groaning. My teammates are rolling their eyes. John Collins hasn't caught a alley-oop in like two quarters. Oh crap, I need to do something. So I think we'll start seeing teams kind of like dare these guys to do it.
Sure.
It's my thought.
But like, what if Kemba is the one? Like, let's flip it around to the Celtics and bring it back. What if Kemba's the guy doing that? What if Jason Tatum's the guy doing it? Because if now my reaction, I can already feel it in my body as I'm talking about it. If Tatum comes down and just pulls from the logo, I'd be like, dude, that's no. I mean, is that reserved for like certain people? Is that just a hardened, like, I'm not letting Dame take those shots from the logo because I dare him or not. Like, I'm afraid of that. I'm not letting Harden do it. I'm not letting Curry do it. Maybe it's just a few guys that are like the real dangerous ones. And there are other guys that you would dare them to do it.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't even know if I'd even let Dame get past half court without at least having a body on him, right, the way he's been playing right now, just to get that out the way. But yeah, like it is, I do think it right now it's a prestigious club, the 30 plus club. It's very prestigious. it's a very limited club. You can't always get in. Not everyone has the card. And I think there's maybe like five or six people in the league right now who have it. And if it starts extending, you know, like with this new influx of kids watching the Trae Youngs, the Steph Currys, the Damian Lillards, when that starts becoming a thing, and maybe now we get to a point where it's like, I don't know, like 5% of our league has it now, which is like 20 people, 25, which is a lot. Yeah, maybe then that's kind of when I think we'll really get to a point where it's like, okay, this might be an issue now, because like it's completely changing the game and kind of taking out any of like, and I now I sound corny, but it takes out like the beauty of the game, like the type of things that make us fall in love with the game, like the symmetry, the togetherness, the synergy, the play call, stuff like that. Now if it's just going to be guys shooting, like it's the fourth full court scrimmage at the YMCA,
right?
No one wants to watch that. No one wants to watch that.
Right. So that's the interesting kind of. I love talking about this stuff because who knows? Like, who knows what the next step is? We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue talking about the Celtics and bringing it back to the Celtics. But before I go, I'm going to remind you of this awesome podcast network contest that we're doing. You can win two tickets to see the Celtics at the Garden. Or if you're a fan of another team, your favorite team at their home arena, you can just guess the NBA trade before it happens. We're calling it Pre-Bomb the Woj Bomb. Go to any of the Locked On NBA accounts. Locked On NBA Net on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Locked On NBA Net on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Post a trade that you think will happen by the deadline. Tag 5 people in your trade post. And if you are right, you'll have a chance to win 2 tickets to see the Celtics at the Garden. Trades will be evaluated based on players and picks, not cash. Multiple people, if they all get it, then the first person with the correct trade is the winner. One winner will be chosen across all Locked On social accounts. And if no one gets the exact trade right, someone will still win. We're just going to do a sort of closest to the pin. So go pre-bomb the Woj Bomb with your trade deadline trade at any of the Locked On NBA Net social media channels.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So one of my big takeaways from the game, and just recently, is the I feel like, Alex, we've seen, I don't want to say a step forward from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, but even since the All-Star thing, that Jaylen Brown has responded to not being named an All-Star with just a little more aggression, just a little bit more like, oh, okay, I'm going to show you that you should have chosen me. And that Jason Tatum has stepped up with, I'm going to justify that you've chosen me. And it's just an interesting, I think, reaction between those two. And especially good reaction because it wasn't that long ago that Kemba Walker in a piece on ESPN said, this is their team. And to see these guys react to this thing, this very public thing in this way, I find it encouraging.
I just want to thank Kyrie Irving for putting our guys through so much adversity and pain. Just really building their morale, building up their thick skin so that at times of adversity like this, they're able to just kind of stay strong and persevere through.
I want to point out, I need like if this wasn't already like a thing on Count the Dings, all of the side shots that you take, you're like a dude playing mailbox baseball in a car. You come onto the show and you get me right away. You got the Sixers. Now you got Kyrie. This is an impressive appearance from you. I just got to say that. All right. Continue with your point.
But yes, to your point, it has been good to see them kind of respond that way, especially Jalen. I've liked how, you know, he didn't have his girlfriend come and start commenting on Instagram and Twitter about how he deserved it or anything like that. He actually just, you know, played both ends of the court, continued to be an efficient monster. And, you know, he's 23. He obviously is upset by it. He obviously felt some type of way.
Sure.
I'm not in Boston, but you were probably in there. It kind of felt for me from the outside, aka Twitter, like they were excited for Tatum, but it was also like, we also kind of know Jalen didn't get in, so like let's kind of like reserve it. Like you keep hearing Brad Stevens say, like the dad stuff. Oh, it's more important to be playing like an all star than to be named one. You know, so it's like there's definitely like some like kind of like okay, like we know this obviously isn't great, but yeah, like Jalen. His whole career, like he's always responded to adversity by just like putting his head down and playing well. So I honestly expected nothing different. And you kind of see Tatum now is kind of like he's been growing. And I know you touched on this on the podcast a moment time about how he's trying to put things together. And it's like now he just has this like kind of like confidence in him where it's like, I know where my shots are coming from. I know where I'm going to get my shots. I know how to get where I need to go. And it was just really impressive kind of like watching now how he can like direct traffic and it's like, give me the ball. No. I know what to do with it. And, you know, like I just think now he's at a stage where he's putting it together. He's confident about who he is. He's confident in his offense and where his shots are coming from. And both of them kind of putting it together at the same time has been just a very, very good development for the Celtics while Kemba has been like secretly struggling with his shot.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, he has not been shooting well. I wonder how much his knee has been a part of that. So maybe we'll see if the shot comes back now that he's taken a couple of games off. I do think that it was important for Brad Stevens to continuously make the point about playing like all-stars and knowing that they're like you're all stars to us type of thing, because he knew that you probably weren't going to get both of them. And so you had to make sure that he was the voice of like, all right, we don't want this to sow any division in the locker room, because the Celtics Twitter account and the Celtics PR side has to tout the all-star. They have to be like, hey, look how awesome this is. We got Jason Tatum. Everybody celebrate Jason Tatum. He's an all-star now. So it had to be a balance on the team to make sure that Jalen kind of knew, like, look, don't be too upset if you don't get it. And he didn't get it. So the response, I think, has been great. He has vastly outplayed any of my expectations. Like the way he's shown the growth. I highlighted the one play on masslive.com where it was just a drive and just the way he set his defender up, the way he got low and bumped him right at the hip and threw the little shoulder fake. I mean, that's a lot of that stuff that wasn't happening on a regular basis. And he's just in so much more control now that it's just really good to see. And whatever he's feeling privately, He just does not let on publicly at all. He just keeps it in and he channels it and he continues to channel it, to your point, in a positive way.
So, John, let me ask you, do you think Jaylen should have made the All-Star game? Because I know everyone was trying to make it like a Brown versus Tatum thing, which was weird because they were listed at different positions, which kind of like made like their quote unquote competition a little bit different, and they weren't actually directly competing with each other. But I know with the way the reserve voting is set up, there were two wild card spots and we don't know who were the two wild card spots. So it could have been a situation where they did pick Tatum over Brown. Are you someone that agrees with that decision to pick Tatum, or were you someone that thought Brown was more deserving?
So I went back and forth. About 2-3 weeks ago, I thought Jaylen Brown was more deserving. And then he got hurt. He hurt his thumb. He sprained his ankle. He missed some time. And the super efficient play that he had been showing for a while kind of went away a little bit. At that same time, I think Tatum hit his career high. He went off on a real tear. And I think it was like one of those horse races, like neck and neck, each stride put that horse in front. So it was like Tatum, no Brown, no Tatum, no Brown. And I think Tatum just got hot and Brown kind of cooled off just enough at just the right time. So I think Tatum, they both deserved it equally. And it's hard for me to make a case for one or the other. I would lean slightly Tatum. I think the tiebreaker is that Tatum creates a little bit more, and Jaylen is just a little bit more reliant on the space that others create. And maybe that's not fair, but it's just enough that if I'm looking for like the slimmest tiebreaker, like that, I think is probably it.
Yeah, it's a very, very nice answer. Very, very political. I think I'm missing something because I didn't think it was close, to be completely honest with you. I honestly thought it was Jason Tatum, and I was very confused by why it felt like it was people were talking about like it was close. And the reason I say that were like two things. One, when you look at like the on-off splits in terms of like the impact that these guys are making, like Tatum's team net rating was like almost double Jaylen Brown. I think I'm gonna accept the Jays. And then on top of that, like I think Jaylen played his role more consistently. But I really, really, and to your point, you didn't make this point, I really gave a lot more credit to Tatum because he was in more of a self-creation role. Like, I think Tatum, and I don't know these numbers off the top of my head, but I was looking at them for something I'm writing. Like, Tatum is taking, like, more than, like, in terms of, like, possessions, like, P&R possessions, it's more than double than a Brown. His usage is higher. He plays more isolation than Brown, like, more double. And maybe, you know, good or bad, depending on what you think about that. But I just think when you kind of, like, look, like, a guy playing kind of like in terms of like kind of like Tatum, like Kemba's 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call it. And he's responsible for all this kind of self creating. And he's the one that sees traps more than Brown, though both of them. It's not like they see it every game. I just kind of weighed that more heavily. And it meant more to me than kind of Brown being like a better piece that like kind of played off of Kemba and Tatum. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. But I get it. And I think if you look at like I don't know how many people would really honestly say the hierarchy of the Celtics offense is something other than Kemba, Tatum, Brown, and then, you know, Hayward or some, but Tatum is definitely more of a creator. Like he just has more in his bag than Jaylen does. And it's not a knock on Jaylen. Jaylen has plenty. But why it was close is that Jaylen came out and was playing well from the start, and maybe his responsibilities were less, but he was still doing those things, doing them well and shooting very well, while Tatum started the season not hitting any layups, you know, and that, you know, it's a first impression thing for sure, because you still get people say, oh God, can he just hit a layup, please? Like, all right, well, since December, he's hit plenty of layups. He's hit them at a normal rate, maybe above average rate. So, but the way, like all of the stuff that I'd been talking about, like all of like the experimentation things, that kind of depressed a lot of the efficiency numbers. And I know why he did it, or I think I know why he did it. And I think next year you might see a little bit different kind of separation between the two. But considering from beginning of the season to right up about like 2 weeks before the to that point where I said that Tatum kind of pulled away, I think Brown's consistency generally and his efficiency numbers, I thought that kept him right there neck and neck with Tatum.
I think that's fair. I also think part of that was also just, I know kind of like your thoughts about Jaylen Brown preseason were pretty similar to like a lot of our thoughts in terms of like, we love him, but it's unclear if he's ever going to really take that star step.
Mm-hmm.
I think Smart Money said that it's most likely that he was going to be, you know, a highly successful two-way role player, right? So I think it was jarring for a lot of us to see him take that step so, like, so crazy, like, so clearly, like, going from a guy who, as Marcus Smart quoted saying in a Slam magazine piece, looked like he was in a sunken place at times on both ends of the court, suddenly going to a guy who was, like, who's kind of like thinking on his way to like the rim, couldn't suddenly dribble at a high level and kind of, you know, get shaked by people, as Matisse Thybulle found out. And suddenly, like, you see this guy who you had these kind of like expectations for kind of like perform. Now it's like, oh, Sam, that's the star level. And I think that played a part in how people even now kind of talk about Brown versus Tatum. Like, for Tatum, it was kind of expected. Like, you're expected to make the All-Star game. You're expected to score 25 points a game and be better and kind of be part of carrying the team. But for Jaylen, that wasn't expected. And yeah, I think part of that played a part into how now and during the whole All-Star process, we view Jaylen's season versus Tatum's.
Yeah. I mean, expectation versus reality. I mean, that's what it boils down to. We were hoping for, I think we had higher expectations for Tatum, and initially it was like, all right, kid, when are you going to take this step? And Jaylen, I definitely had lower expectations, and I still think they were high, but not quite as high as Tatum's. And then he exceeded them. So it was like, whoa, yeah, for sure. He's an all-star. So, I mean, that definitely plays into it. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more about these rumors that are floating out there and see if there's any legitimacy to any of them. Stick around. More Locked On Celtics next. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So I'll go ahead and say okay, boomer, to myself, because I hate the trade deadline. I hate it mostly because I hate all of the fake stuff that's floating around. I hate people who pretend that they have sources, trying to pretend that they know something. And I just, the fake trades that get thrown out there, it just bugs me. Like, no, that five-team trade is not going to happen. I'm sorry. Who says no? Me. So people love it, and that's fine. I don't. I think it brings out the absolute worst. And the new thing that I'm seeing is like outlets who say, well, there are no Celtics rumors, so let's just talk about maybe trading for Karl Anthony Towns. Be like, no. How about you write about something else instead of trying to force feed us some bullshit about Karl Anthony Towns when he's not getting traded? And we know he's not getting traded. So that's, I'll preface all of that with this. The rumors out there, we've heard them. We've heard Danny Ainge kind of talk about it. We just, Steve Wolpet in the Herald just kind of published something that said the same thing. Celtics are going to look at the end of their bench. They're not going to make this big splashy trade. So, Alex, do you believe that, or do you think this is all one big diversion so the Celtics can make a big splashy trade?
Well, I think history suggests that we should probably believe it. They don't really make trades at the deadlines often. That's basically been their MO. I think the last trade they made was the Jabari Bird kind of salary dump at the deadline, and that was it. So honestly, you can never know. Maybe if a good situation comes, you always have to preface it like that. But I think smart money says that they're probably going to look for more end-of-the-bench pieces, and Danny Ainge kind of flat-out admitted it when he came on the pregame show, just like, hey, we need to add more vets. We're a little too young. I think this team knows they're good. I don't think they freak out about bigs the way everyone else does about them, because their metrics kind of grayed out in terms of, you know, shots allowed in the paint, shots defended at the rim. Like, they grayed out relatively good to well, based on, you know, like who they have starting at the center. They've shown, like, you know, like they can, I think the game against Philly, it sounds super homerish because obviously the last game against Philly, I think, meant more than any of the other three games. And the reason I say that was opening night is opening night. Like, it's whatever. Everyone's new. Everyone's just kind of coming in. It's not serious. Like, no one's taking any grand gestures from that. But then the last two games against Philadelphia, we played on the second game of back-to-back. Now, usually, like, the Celtics aren't going to use that as an excuse. You'll never hear Brad Stevens say, that's why we lost. But when you look at, like, last night, the last game we played against them, and the type of movement you have to do to defend Philly, because we are small, like, the type of hard doubling, the type of, like, chasing closeouts. Even Miami had to do the same thing. Like, you have to scramble so much the whole game to kind of, like, make sure you make and beat uncomfortable, then race out to shooters and switch. And you have to do all of these things to kind of, like, contain their size, that I don't think that was, like, possible to do when you're playing on a second game of a back-to-back. And basically that whole rant is to say, I don't think they're scared of Philly and Embiid in a way that, like, a lot of us might think they are or should be. And I think what they're looking at is the fact that they're a middle-of-the-road shooting team, three-point shooting team. And if you're going to beat the Bucks, who are, you know, asking teams to shoot and take wide open shots, you're going to beat the Sixers, who you can get shots on them, you have to be able to shoot at a high clip. And that's why I think we're hearing more about them being interested in guys like Davis Bertans, Alex Burks, Imanja Bjelica?
Bjelica.
I think those guys make more sense, because it's about, and this is a mistake Philly made. Philly, when they built their team, were so focused on building their team to then beat another team instead of building their team to maximize what they do well. And I think the Celtics are smart enough to know it's not about kind of just getting guys just for some theoretical matchup that, again, may or may not happen. It's about building the best out of your team. And right now, I think what their team needs is definitely more shooting at the end of their rotation. So to answer your question, yes, I believe that they're going to focus on end the bench pieces as opposed to making big splashes.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you made maybe the best point of the podcast, that it's almost like I'm not quite as afraid of Philly anymore. And in fact, we have to start looking at the possibility that the Celtics may not play Philly. And it's going to depend on, can the Celtics get to that second seed? And will the Raptors ever freaking lose again? And if the Celtics can get up to two, then Philly right now is sitting at sixth. They're not going to fall to seventh, I don't think. And so sixth might be their floor. And if they continue scuffling around at the 5-6 range, then if the Celtics can get to two and avoid Philly, then Philly has to play that third seed, which might be Toronto. And that's going to be hard for them to do. Or the fourth seed, Miami or the Pacers. And the way Philly's playing right now, I don't know that Philly gets through those teams. They have serious problems. And even if they do, then it really is a tough road. And by the time it gets to the Celtics, then the Celtics might have an advantage, and who knows what the hell happens to Embiid after a long playoff series. I just don't trust his conditioning. But if the Celtics can get up to second, then they now have a much different path to the conference finals and a better path to the conference finals. And to do that, it's not about the center. And as Danny Ainge said before the Hawks game on NBC Sports Boston, they're not getting beat at center. They're getting beat in other ways. It's not, they're not losing center battles and losing games. They're getting beat on the perimeter, or they're just not hitting shots and they're giving up transition points, or they're turning the ball over. So help off the bench, a shooter, some sort of scoring off the bench would be definitely ideal. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics find something, some way. And the question then becomes, who do they give up? Is it Poirier, some scrap heap, Poirier, Carson Edwards? Do they dangle Romeo Langford and say, hey, this, we just got too much wing depth, this isn't going to work out, and you attach a pick, maybe you attach the Memphis pick, which, what's that going to be now? 10 to 15? Like, go ahead. I'm depending on the player, not just give it up willy-nilly, but I'm okay with a first-round pick and end-of-bench young pieces that a team could take a flyer on for some immediate shooting help.
Yeah, for sure. And just a quick point, if the Sixers have to play the Toronto Raptors, Brett Brown better start selling his real estate in Philadelphia. He's not gonna.
That's
not. He's not gonna survive. No.
I don't know if he makes it to the end of the season.
No.
And I don't follow his coaching moves closely enough to say whether it's his fault or not. I
don't think it matters. It doesn't matter because for them it's like, what do you want to believe more, that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons can't fit together, or do you want to believe in a fantasy, or do you want to keep that and just say your coach? It's always the coach first, whether he's a good coach or not. The fact that they're underperforming, it's going to be on his head.
Totally.
We're talking about the Sixers way too much. I apologize. I just had a lot on my chest.
It's your fault. But the Sixers loom over the Celtics. Like, that's been the thing. We came into this season with, do the Celtics have enough size to deal with the Sixers? Like, that was the number one question, because everyone assumed that the Sixers were going to be the inevitable playoff foe. And it was always going to be about, can the Celtics get past the Sixers? And if they can, then whew, all right, we're good. And now the calculus has changed. And so, yeah, we're watching the Sixers closely, because what they do can impact what the Celtics do, or the path that the Celtics take. If they figure something out, then the Embiid problem becomes more of a problem. And maybe the way they played him in the last game is much more of a factor. But also, Embiid was checked out in that last game. Like, I don't know what the hell he was doing, but he wasn't playing basketball. He wasn't playing his best. So, but we'll see. Trade deadline is Thursday. So we've got one more day, a little bit more than one more day. So we'll be here with all of the reaction. And of course, we have our pre-bomb, the Woj Bomb contest on the Locked On Podcast Network. Go to Locked On NBA Net on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Drop your trade, tag 5 people in your trade post. If anybody gets it on the nose, you'll be entered to win 2 tickets to see your favorite team at the home arena, which I'm assuming for you, it's the Celtics at the Garden. But maybe you're listening. Maybe you're one of those Sixers fans hate listening to the show. So whatever. Go ahead. Locked On NBA Net. Check that out. And all of you who haven't subscribed, please do that. All of you who have subscribed, please 5-star rating, a good review, and share the podcast. Spread the word. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.